Testing in the House Chamber, Legislative Day 119.
House will come to order. Members will take their seats. Visitors will retire from the chamber. The sergeant-at-arms will close the doors. This afternoon's prayer will be offered by Representative Arp. Is he on the floor? I don't see Representative Arp. Representative Cleveland, would the gentleman like to offer our invocation this morning? It's the first time Representative Cleveland has been at a loss for words in the history of the General Assembly. Representative Lambeth, would the gentleman like to offer our invocation? I invite the gentleman forward to do that.
Since Representative Arp is my seatmate, I'll cover for him this morning. Let us all join with thankful hearts in prayer. Our Heavenly Father, it is again certainly a privilege to be here to represent so many people across this great state of North Carolina. Sometimes we reflect on the work that we're doing because it can be challenging, it can be difficult. But we know through your help, your support, our prayers are often answered. Our prayers are answered. You give us the strength. You help us make the decisions that are in the best interest of the people we serve. We know there are many people across North Carolina who are suffering. Individuals that have illnesses and sicknesses. Family members who are struggling because of unemployment. We pray for your blessings upon those members. We pray today as we continue this session that we will make the right decisions and the best decisions for all we serve. We pray for our nation. We pray for those who are on foreign soil, who are stressed and challenged. We know there are many needs across our country. Now as we go through this day, we ask your blessings upon each member and each family that's represented here. In your name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The gentleman from Cumberland, Representative Soka, is recognized for a motion.
Mr. Speaker, the journal for August 31st has been examined and found to be correct. I move that it be approved as written.
Representative Zoka moves that the journal for August 31st be approved as written. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it, and the journal is approved as written. Ratification of bills and resolutions. The clerk will read.
The enrolling clerk reports the following bills due to ratify for presentation to the governor. Senate Bill 211, an act to encourage investments to regulate the water and sewer systems by authorizing the use of water and sewer investment plan, rate-making mechanism, and establishing rates regulated the water and sewer utilities, and to otherwise amend an adjustment mechanism for water and sewer improvements. House Bill 27, an act to ensure that all magistrates receive the education necessary to perform the duty of a magistrate. House Bill 95, an act to authorize the Commissioner of Agriculture to review the application of reuse of denied license for wholesale distributors of prescription drugs as considered upon approval of the prescription drug under the federal law while the federal approval process is pending. House Bill 351, an act directing the Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services to establish a visitation protocol for nursing homes, combination homes, and adult care homes, including family care homes, during declared disasters, emergencies, require these facilities to adhere to the establishment visitation protocols during the declared disaster and emergencies when normal visitation policies are suspended or curtailed. House Bill 403, an act to revise and clarify the law governing the new motor vehicle dealer franchises. House Bill 476, an act to establish Stanley County residence requirements for two district court seats in Judicial District 20A. House Bill 608, an act to promote the dignity of women who are incarcerated. House Bill 769, an act to approve the Bill of Rights recognizing the rights of foster parents in the state of North Carolina. House Bill 805, an act to increase the penalties for rioting, inciting riot, and causing damage to property, serious bodily injury, and death of assaulting emergency personnel during the rioting state of emergency to allow recovery of treble damages and property damage or personal injury caused by rioting and looting, and to require pretrial release condition of rioting and looting offenses to be determined by a judge. And the following bills and resolutions duly ratified, properly enrolled, and prepared for presentation to the Office of the Secretary of State. Senate Bill 733, an act to promote persons of various public offices upon recommendation of the President pro tem of the Senate and the Speaker of the House of Representatives. Senate Joint Resolution 730, a joint resolution confirming Catherine M. R. Boskin as Commissioner of Banks.
Chat reels will be noted. Representative Hall recognized, sent forth committee report. Clerk Reed.
Representative Hall, Rose County, offers the House Committee Report. Senate Bill 60, approved various solid waste rule changes, favorable.
Calendar, and without objection, day's calendar. So ordered.
Senate Bill 99, clarified law on theft and catalytic converters, favorable.
Calendar, and without objection, day's calendar. So ordered. Representative Hall is recognized, send forth an additional committee report. Clerk will read.
Representative Hall, Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House Committee Report, Senate Bill 389, DEQ, DNCR, Omnibus, AV, favor House Committee Substitute, unfavor original bill.
Calendar, and without objection, day's calendar. So ordered. That's correct. That's the committee sub that's on for today. The original bill will be placed on the unfavorable calendar. Thank you, Mr. Clerk. Representative Hannig is recognized to a point of personal privilege.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Today I stand here to commemorate my LA's 10-year anniversary. I just want to thank him for his dedication to this state. Wes Householder, he started with the Speaker. And he worked for Jeff Collins for several years until he landed his dream job with me. And I appreciate him very much. And he's not up here because we didn't think we'd get in here this early. But if y'all could stop by and tell him thank you. And I appreciate all his efforts and his dedication to this great state. Thank you.
Representative Hannig, when he shows up, let the chair know. And we'll make sure we recognize him at that time. Representative Warren, does the gentleman wish to be recognized to send forth a representative statement that would be read upon adjournment today?
Yes, Mr. Speaker.
The gentleman is recognized. The chair will direct that be done upon adjournment. The gentleman has the floor to speak to a point of personal privilege.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'd like to share with you a little story about a gentleman named Henry Ellis. Henry spent the first 14 years of his life growing up in Rowan County before his family moved to Roanoke, Virginia. Henry was just 14 when he started working at Bethlehem Steel Company. While there, he had received a draft notice from the Secret Service, and they, being unconvinced of his age, gave him a choice to either return to Bethlehem Steel or to produce a birth certificate. Henry instead decided to join the Marines. And he trained at Montford Point, not far from Camp Lejeune. That was on November 9th, 1943. Born on August 24th, 1928, Henry was just 15 years old when he joined the Marines. A commanding officer recommended that Henry's service records be corrected and that he be allowed to continue in the service, writing that Henry was, quote, sufficiently mature and physically able to perform his duties, unquote. And he did, even re-enlisting in the Marines when he turned 18. Throughout World War II, Henry saw action in the Pacific Theater and for his outstanding service, he was awarded the Purple Heart, the Combat Action Medal, the Marine Corps Good Conduct Medal, the Asiatic Pacific Campaign Medal, World War II Victory Medal, and a Presidential Unit Citation for 3 Bronze Stars, which were awarded to the 4th Marine Division for service in Saipan and Tinian on June 15th through August 1st, 1944, the 1st Marine Division for service in Okinawa from September 15th through October 11th, 1950, and the 1st Marine Division for service in Korea, November 27th to December 11th, 1950. It was in December of 1950 when Henry's sister Mildred received a letter notifying her that Henry was killed in action. A second letter told her that Henry's remains could not be retrieved until hostilities ended. A subsequent letter in March of 1951 had explained that Henry was part of a truck convoy that intersected with an army convoy, both on their way to Hagaria. Coming under enemy fire, the two joint forces fighting the enemy, making it halfway to their destination before a roadblock actually stopped their advance. The convoys attempted to turn around and backtrack, but they were surrounded, and Henry was killed in the ensuing battle. It was 5 years later, in February 1956, the family was informed that Henry's remains were unable to be recovered and returned. And so it remained for more than 70 years until 2012, when the Department of Defense located and requested DNA samples from Henry's closest living relatives. But it wasn't until September of 2020 that Henry's remains were officially identified and accounted for. On Monday last week, Monday, August 23rd, Henry's remains were returned to Salisbury, and special ceremonies were held in his honor to commemorate his service, his sacrifice, and his homecoming. Descendants of Henry's were in attendance as presentations were made by the Montford Point Marines Association, representatives from Governor Roy Cooper's office. Senator Carl Ford and I attended on behalf of the General Assembly, where Senator Ford presented the family a flag that had flown over our state capitol. The Rowan County Commission was there and presented, as well as the mayor of Salisbury. Henry has also been chosen to receive the Congressional Medal of Honor for being a Montford Point Marine. And additionally, this year, the National Marine Chaplains Association will award a deserving college student a scholarship in Henry's name. I ask my colleagues to join me in recognizing that the war has finally ended for Marine Private First Class Henry Ellis, and Henry has returned home.
Members, on motion of Representative Warren of Rowan County, the chair is honored to extend the courtesies of the gallery to Trudy Neely, who is the niece, Henry Bernard Cowan, nephew, and then Roseanne Cowan, who is the wife of the nephew. Would you please stand so we could welcome you and thank you for being with us today. Back here in the back, we're honored to have you with us today. Thank you again for being with us today. Calendar, House Bill 229, the clerk will read.
Representatives Eiler and Miller, House Bill 229, a bill to entitle an act to extend the term of mayor from 2 to 4 years in the town of North Carolina Shores, General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
The gentleman from Brunswick, Representative Eiler, is recognized for motion.
Thank you, Speaker. I move that we do concur with the Senate Committee Substitute for House Bill 229.
The gentleman has properly moved that the House concur with the Senate Committee Substitute to House Bill 229, and the gentleman has the floor to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The only change that was made in the Senate, by the way, this was a request in March from the town unanimously, and we passed the bill in April, sent it to the Senate. It was delayed for several months, and we had a filing period in July, so they had to add an amendment to reopen the filing, which will be next week for about 4 days, and this has been run by the state board and the local board and the one candidate who filed, and everybody's in agreement, and that's the only change that was made. So I move that we do concur, and your aye vote would be appreciated.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question for the House is the motion to concur with the Senate committee substitute to House Bill 229. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. House Bill, the Senate, strike that. The House having concurred with the Senate committee substitute to House Bill 229, the bill is ordered and rolled. Members, Chair is going to strike the referral to rules on Senate Bill 321. This is the amend North Carolina Controlled Substances Act on calendar 36B, and Chair intends to add it to today's calendar. The Chair is informed that it is not a controversial bill, but if it comes back that there's some issue, we can always pull it back off. Any objection to add to the calendar? Hearing none, so ordered. If any members take a look at it and want additional time, Chair's glad to look at that. But again, that's Senate Bill 329. It should be loaded shortly to the dashboard. House Bill 324, the clerk will read.
Representatives Singh, Bowles, Yagura, and Torbett, House Bill 324, a bill to be entitled Ensuring Dignity and Non-Discrimination in Schools, General Assembly, North Carolina enacts.
The gentleman from Gaston, Representative Torbett, is recognized for motion.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to move that the House do now concur with the Senate committee substitute for House Bill 324.
The gentleman has moved that the House concur with the Senate committee substitute to House Bill 324, and the gentleman has the floor to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, members of the House. First and foremost, I want to thank the many concerned parents, students, aunts and uncles, grandparents and teachers who have contacted me and you, their elected representatives, with concerns about what is being taught in our classrooms today. House Bill 324 demonstrates the General Assembly's intent that students, teachers, administrators, and other school employees recognize the equality and rights of all persons and provides a window for parents to see what their children are being taught. Additionally, it prevents discriminatory concepts from being taught as fact or endorsed in North Carolina school districts. This includes being taught that one race or sex is inherently superior to another race or sex, or other related concepts that reduce individuals to simply their gender or skin color. To be clear, this bill does not change what history can and cannot be taught. No spin or innuendo changes that. I would encourage each of you, if you haven't, to simply read the bill. It simply prevents schools from endorsing discriminatory concepts. At the end of the day, we should all be able to agree that no student, no teacher, no parent, nor any school employee should ever be made to feel inferior solely because the color of their skin or their gender. This legislation goes far beyond the current debate over critical race theory and is written to prevent schools from endorsing any ideology that treats people in a prejudicial manner, both now and in our future. North Carolina must have an education system that unites our children, not divides them. An educational system that propels our children onto their path of achievement to reach their American dream. With that, I encourage support from the members of the House. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
What purpose does the lady from Wake, Representative Gill, rise?
To speak to the bill.
The lady has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, when I looked at the bill, I thought, title sounds all right, but let me look further into the bill and see about the devils in the detail. I am a former classroom teacher. I taught for 23 years in the Wake County public school system. Teaching is a profession, and our teachers are professional. They are taught how to teach their subject matter. They are taught that they must always have respect from the class and from other personnel in the school. They always have a command of their subject, and that is what teachers do. They teach their subject. matter. You know, sometimes we talk about teachers as if they don't know what they're doing. And sometimes I wonder about the fact that are we trying to throw the baby out with the water? I also want to tell you something that happened to me as a classroom teacher. My first year coming out of teaching, out of college, I taught at an integrated school. And some of the students said I had an accent and that sometimes it was difficult for them to hear me. But I thought that I spoke well, and I thought that most of the comments that I made were understood by all of my students. But I had a student who went home and told his parents, his or her, I won't say who it is, they might remember this, because they're still here in Wake County, that I was a bad teacher and that I used God's name in vain and that I cursed in my classroom every day. I didn't know this, but when my principal came to tell me about it, you know, I wondered, how in the world can someone think that I was using God's name in vain and profanity in a classroom of 30 students per hour and 6 classes a day? Because pretty much when you start out teaching, you get to teach the same subject matter for 3 to 5 hours a day. But I get real excited when I'm teaching math and the students are learning. And to be honest with you, this person was a straight A student in my class. I said to myself, maybe this student is failing and he's saying that the reason why he or she is failing the class is because I'm not teaching the subject. But when the principal told me what the child had gone home and told their parents, and that the parents wanted me fired from the school, I was shocked. I usually tell students when they're doing well, and I believe instant praise of students is better than waiting until they put it on a paper and pass it in to you and you pass it back to them. So I had a saying, you got that right. And I don't know how many of you are able to put that together in a phrase that may have understood, or you may have understood it to be using God's name in vain or cursing. You got that right. And I guess it depends on how fast you say it. But that was the phrase that the young lady was talking about. You know, if the principal did not think that I was doing my job in a professional way, then that principal might have fired me without even telling me what was going on. But that principal had observed me several times and was very pleased with what I was doing in the classroom. So I'm saying to you that sometimes we think teachers are not doing what they're saying or doing right by all students. Teachers really, really want our students to get the best education possible. In a math class, have I had questions asked of me about race? Yes. I was in the civil rights demonstration back in the 60s. I've had students to talk to me either during class, and I'll have to say, we're in a math class, I have to get back to my math subject. But I would tell them to see me after class, I'd talk to them about it. But anyway, the fact that they wanted to, somebody had told them that I participated in the civil rights movement was interesting to them, and they wanted to know just exactly what I did. Now, I want to know, is a conversation like that something we want to ban? Because that child that asked that question really wanted to know about the civil rights movement and what part I played in it. So I think we need to be very careful that when we set policy, that it's good policy, and the policy is to help our teachers teach our kids the best that they can and make all of our kids successful. So I think we should not be establishing policies such as the one we're getting ready to vote on. And I certainly hope that you will not concur with it. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Mecklenburg, Representative Lofton, rise?
To debate the bill.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. One of the most powerful experiences of my life was when I attended a family reunion in Northumberland County, Virginia, where my family was enslaved. My grandmother's grandmother, Sarah Lewis, was in her 20s at the time of emancipation. The very first thing my family did at the end of slavery was build a church. The second thing they did was to build a school. In fact, that family reunion was held at the site of that very school. So if you can picture it, there I am, a young lawyer, returning to the land of where my great-great-grandmother and her family were slaves and where they built a life for themselves after emancipation. Of course, as we know, that life wasn't easy. After the Civil War, Virginia passed some of the nation's first and strictest black codes. These laws restricted the right to vote. They enforced segregation. They imposed forced labor on black children through, quote, apprenticeships programs. And they even banned black Virginians, like my family, from owning firearms during a time of rampant Ku Klux Klan violence. This is the history that shaped my family's story. I rise today as an elected representative and a lawyer, but most importantly as their son. I have to speak out against this bill. This bill, while innocuous sounding enough, encourages us to look away from our history, to look away from the truth. It even goes so far as to encourage, quote, impartial, the word impartial meaning neutral, detached, and disinterested teaching of slavery, segregation, and racial oppression like that which my family suffered under Virginia's black codes. Neutral, detached, and disinterested. You know, my first job out of law school was working for the legendary civil rights lawyer, Julius Chambers. That's the job that brought me home to North Carolina. As you know, Julius Chambers helped integrate public schools all across our nation by successfully arguing Swan versus Charlotte Mecklenburg schools before the United States Supreme Court. It's one of the great victories and contributions of our state to the great civil rights movement. He did so despite the threats against his life. He did so despite the bombing of his office, the bombing of his car, and the bombing of his home. Working for Julius Chambers and learning from him was one of the greatest honors of my life. When I think about Julius Chambers, when I think about my family, when I think about the Greensboro Four, or the countless men, women, and children, black and white, from all over this nation who marched and protested and sat in and risked everything to give life to the self-evident truth that all are created equal, I don't feel shame. I don't feel guilt. I feel gratitude. I feel inspired. I feel responsible. We live in the greatest nation in the history of the world. It was not made so by accident. It was not made so overnight. It was made the greatest nation in the history of the world because Americans, black and white, young and old, who were willing to be uncomfortable, who were willing to look squarely at the truth, and see the possible, see the greatness in this nation. How can we now turn away from that legacy? How can we now turn away from our responsibility? Our responsibility to the truth, our responsibility to their legacy, and our responsibility to this great nation. Please vote no.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Nash, Representative Galliard, rise?
To debate the bill.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen of the House, I rise today to voice my no vote to House Bill 324. Our nation relies on a well-informed, a well-educated electorate. Our teachers and our parents are tasked with cultivating young minds that are inquisitive, young minds that are balanced because they've been exposed to a broad range of ideas and concepts. I didn't always know this, but since I've been in the General Assembly, I've learned that all of our legislation, when passed, has consequences and sometimes unintended consequences. As I read Section 1, Subsection C of the bill that lists all the concepts that should not be taught, and in doing so, what it does is that it makes this legislation, whether intended or not, legislation that is about censorship and about book banning. This bill has a near fixation on references to race, racism, sex, oppression. If you just read the words of the bill. And I got to asking myself, how would then this legislation play out in a high school English, in a high school English class? If this became law, teachers could no longer teach Great Gatsby because there would be too much discussion about class, about status, about wealth. We could never again teach the Scarlet Letter because of its themes about religion and gender roles and the flaws in our society. We couldn't teach The Last Mohican because of its attention on colonialism and prejudice. There would be no more reading of Gone with the Wind because of a focus on white privilege, a focus on slavery, a focus on plantations, or To Kill a Mockingbird because of its themes on race and class and inequality and prejudice. The bill before us robs young people. It robs young minds. It robs young people from learning that injustices can be turned into justice. It robs them from understanding that in the world there are heroes and there are villains. It robs them from knowing that in every story there are antagonists and protagonists. I'm the father of three wonderful daughters. It robs young girls, because now girls are going to be censored from the classroom discussion about strong, smart, and courageous women like Lizzie Bennet in Pride and Prejudice or Melba Beals in Warriors Don't Cry. Any bill that references race or sex 29 times in one subsection and as an attempt to pass a law censoring the discussion of race in the classroom only confirms that racism is indeed embedded in our laws and in our institutions. Our public school classrooms should be a marketplace of ideas. We should be encouraging an open and robust exchange of thoughts and perspectives. This legislation will prohibit a teacher from responding to a basic question from a student on why people are protesting, or to answer the question why black people are more likely to be killed by the police. This or any attempt to legislate a colorblind curriculum in the classroom, when the society of our students that are living in is far from colorblind, is in its own way its own form of miseducation. At a time when our teachers and our parents need every tool available, this bill censors what they can teach. And this bill provides no pathway to consider the way our history is taught. The good and the bad should be taught faithfully, and this includes the oppression of millions of people. This is America. This is North Carolina. Censorship happens in North Korea, China, Saudi Arabia, but not here. In 1787, the night before the Constitutional Convention, this is what Benjamin Franklin wrote. It is absolutely necessary that knowledge of every kind be disseminated. Any education policy that comes from this General Assembly floor should begin with Leandro and not censorship. I would ask you to vote no on this legislation.
For what purpose does the lady from Durham, Representative Morey, rise?
To speak on the bill.
Lady has the floor.
And just to follow up with my colleague, Representative Galliard's statement, if you just look at the bill, the title of the bill and Section 1A, let's leave it there. Let's vote on that. An act to demonstrate that we will not discriminate, that we will foster and defend intellectual honesty, freedom of inquiry, and instruction, freedom of speech, association. Let's end it there, and it's a great bill. The problem with this, the body of the bill defies what the title of the bill talks about. Because as you go into this bill, Section C, we have 13 prohibitions. You shall not teach this. 13 areas do not teach. But then, I am most concerned when you get over to the next section on page 2, and we talk about what must be posted on the website. And it must be posted 30 days before any instruction is made on any of the 13 prohibitions. So current events, something happens. You have to post it, wait 30 days, see if there are objections before you can teach it. Can we even debate or teach students the debate on this very bill? Because I think many on our side of the aisle says it is censorship. It is racist in and of itself in this language. It is stopping the teaching of concepts. Can I teach? Can I go into a classroom and talk about the governor's racial equity task force, which is based in fact, which is based in racism? Probably not. Have to post it on the website. Can I talk about where jury trials, because they've excluded all black jurors unconstitutionally and being overturned, can I talk about those decisions? Can we teach about Dred Scott? That's the problem with this bill. Not only the 13 areas of prohibition, but if you dare have a racial equity person come in to teach a class, you must post it 30 days before they can come in. What are we doing? Teaching belongs in the hands of the educators, not censorship by the General Assembly. And it can't help but be said, look at our sides of the aisle. And I assure you, every member on our side of the aisle, a member of color, will vote against this bill, and we should take their lead. Thank you.
What purpose, the gentleman from Caldwell, Representative Hall, rise.
Debate the bill.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, this is not my bill, and I didn't intend to speak on it today, but from time to time, I think what happens here is we hear a debate about a bill that's not in front of us, and that's what's taking place today. Much of the criticism that I've heard today is about a bill that's just simply not before this body today. We've heard a claim that this would somehow prevent teachers from teaching about the civil rights movement. And yet, if you actually read the text of the bill, it makes it clear that teachers can't compel students to believe, among other things, that an individual should be discriminated against or receive adverse treatment solely or partly because of his or her race or sex. That's the very essence of the civil rights movement, that we don't treat others differently based upon their race. That's what this bill prohibits. It says that a teacher can't compel a student to believe that. We've heard that this bill somehow would prohibit certain books from being taught. It would be a book ban. Except the problem with that claim is the language of the bill makes it very clear that teachers can't compel students to do certain things, to believe certain things. Not that they can't teach about racism. This has nothing to do with that at all. We all know racism has existed and still does. This bill doesn't prohibit the teaching of that. No, this bill says that a teacher can't compel a student to believe that one race or sex is inherently superior to another race or sex. I wonder if one opponent of this bill would rise and say that they believe that a teacher should be able to compel a student to believe that one race or sex is inherently superior to another race or sex. Will one person who's against the bill rise and stand and say, I think that a teacher should be able to compel that? That's what this bill prohibits. It prohibits a teacher from compelling a student to believe that an individual, solely by virtue of his or her race or sex, is inherently racist, sexist, or oppressive. It says that a teacher can't compel a student to believe that an individual should be discriminated against or receive adverse treatment, solely or partly because of his or her sex. It says a teacher can't compel a student to believe that an individual's moral character is necessarily determined by his or her race or sex. And I could go on, but I won't, because I think the point is made. Frankly, I don't believe anybody in this body believes that these things should be compelled to be believed by any student in our system. Because there are abhorrent beliefs. And I know that the opponents of this bill, they don't believe that's what should be taught in schools. But the opponents are debating a bill that is not in front of this body today. This is a bill about preventing teachers from teaching students and making students believe, compelling them to believe or even profess a belief that one race or sex is inherently superior to another race or sex. Who can disagree with that? In 2021, who believes that that's what should be taught in schools? That's what this bill prohibits. It stops in this state. It has nothing to do with a lot of the other claims that we've heard today. Read the language, focus on the language of the bill and not the national debate surrounding this issue. Let's talk about what this bill would do, because it's very clear and it's very simple. I hope you'll support this bill.
What purpose, gentleman from Wake, Representative Jones, rise.
Speak to the bill. The
gentleman has the floor.
When I look at bills in this assembly, I try to read most of them, and I've managed to accomplish that in the 9 months I've been here. And I always ask myself, what is this bill about, and where did it come from? And I ask my LA, I say, who are the sponsors? Sometimes the sponsors' names are on there, sometimes they aren't. So when I heard about 324, and I read the title, I went to the starting point. It started over in the Senate, I think. Well, maybe it started in the House, I'm not sure, but I went over to the Senate to hear the debate just the other day. Heard Senator Berger speak on it. I went to Senator Berger's press conference before he spoke on it. I listened to Senator Woodard speak on it. And I asked myself, why is this here? Who's out doing any of the 13 things that are prohibited? Who in the world but a Nazi or a Klansman would even teach this stuff, 1 through 13? If you read through the list, I mean, it's crazy stuff. I can't imagine a teacher in the state of North Carolina
and my mother, father, grandmother, grandfather, ex-wife, all teachers. I can imagine a single teacher standing up and teaching somebody that one race or sex is inherently superior to another, that an individual solely by virtue of his or her race or sex is inherently racist, that an individual should be discriminated against or receive adverse treatment solely or partly because of his race or sex. On and on. Who is doing this? Where are you getting this information? It's a boogeyman. And I'd like to see a film or a picture of somebody actually standing in front of a group of students in North Carolina in a classroom and teaching what's in those 13 parts. In fact, the truth of it is, if the bill stopped there, I probably would have to vote for it. Really would. Because that is abhorrent. If it's happening. But as I read the bill, I got a little better feel for it when I got to the second page. And you get into the nitty-gritty of it, which is subpart D of section 1. It says, public school units shall notify, that means it's mandatory, the Department of Public Instruction and make general information available on the public school's unit's website with detailed information available upon request at least 30 days prior to any of the following. And it goes into a list that ties back into the first section, the 13 parts. Now, if somebody were really doing that, understand the reason for the rule. But we have local school boards in this state, Gaston County, Wake County, Mecklenburg County, any county you name. And they have the power and authority to stop anybody who was off the beaten path. It doesn't have to be done from here, because the local people will take care of their local business. So what's the need for us to mandatorily put this mechanism in place where now the local people, some person in X County has reported to the big boys in SDPI up here in Raleigh before they can put forward a curriculum? Seems like too much control from this building. Something that used to be, when I was starting out as a young man, I'm 69 now, but when I first got into politics and was studying, the Republican Party used to stand for the principle that the government closest to the people is the best government. Closest to the people is the school board. That's what they do. And if somebody is threatened by something going on in their county, they can take care of business right in that county. They don't need us. They got the power, the law is already there, and they can take care of it in any county in the state. So what's the purpose of this bill? The purpose of this bill, I believe, reading through the lines, is that somebody up in here wants to control what's going on in a county where they don't come from. They think there's a need for a big rally to pass laws about this. When if you object to something in your county, you have a way of taking care of it right now. Now, a couple other things. It seems to me when you talk about American history, and I majored in American history, 1789 to the present. There's a lot of controversial stuff in history. And it grates a little bit. If you have to get into the nitty gritty, some of it's shocking. When I was a little boy, my mother read me a book called The Negro in Virginia. That's because my daddy was from Virginia. And he went into the history of slavery from 1619 when they first brought Africans to this continent, all the way to the present. Back then it was in the 70s. Now the book's been updated. She read it to us because she wanted her children to know the history. Some parts of it made me cry. Broke my heart. Hurt my little 8-year-old mind and soul that they did that to my ancestors. But she read it to me anyway. It hurt. But she wanted me to know, because she wanted her son to be prepared to go out into the real world and deal with it. And it helped me. So she was smart to do it. Now, we need our children to know the history of our country. They didn't have anything to do with it. They weren't even here. But they need to know. If somebody thinks it's too egregious, too harsh, no, they can handle it. They can handle a lot more than we think. But they need to know. Because history is prologue. That's what's on the awning of the National Archives. And that's what it means. I think about a line from Julius Caesar when Mark Antony was speaking to the crowd and talking about Caesar's accomplishments, now they killed him, and how people should go out and fight that. And then there's a little line in Shakespeare's play where he says, after Antony stirs the crowd up, he says, "Mischief thou art afoot, take whatever course thou wilt." And I suggest that if we start delving into dictating and reviewing what people are teaching in classrooms from the SDPI, because somebody is upset in whatever county, that's going to be "mischief thou art afoot, take whatever course thou wilt," because boy, oh boy, we will be inviting it from here. I suggest that Wake County and other counties can take care of their own business. They don't need any guidance from up here. They have representatives on school boards elected by the people, just like we elected by the people. Do that job specifically. They hire a superintendent of education to do that job specifically. He works at the will of the people in the respective county where he or she serves. So we don't need this bill, but this bill opens up a whole lot of unknown territory. And I've been a judge for 17 years. You'd be surprised how law can be used. I mean, God knows, and you put this bill in the hand of some resourceful lawyers, whew, I hate to think what we'll be getting. Mushrooming litigation because somebody departed from what they think this bill meant. We don't need to go down this road. It's handleable. It's being handled, taken care of, right in the local arena. So I don't know who pushed this through to get it to here, but I would say to any of them, those people, go back home, talk to your local school board members. If it's something being taught in your schools you don't like, they can take care of business. They don't need us. So this bill is fraught with mischief. And if we vote it through and it doesn't get stopped somehow before it becomes law, that line from Julius Caesar will begin to apply. Mischief thou art afoot, take whatever course thou wilt. Thank you.
Members, we're going to allow the debate to keep going. And certainly appreciate the nature and the thoughtful nature of this debate, but would advise the members, we do have two other bills that we do intend to add to today's calendar as well. So with that, for what purpose, the lady from Pitt, Representative Smith, rise.
I would like to ask the bill sponsor a question.
Representative Torbett, does the gentleman yield to a question from Representative Smith?
Certainly.
He yields.
Thank you. Is it a true statement that the Constitution of the United States, one of the country's founding documents, was exclusively signed by 39 white land-owning men? Is it yes or no?
I honestly don't know how many men signed the Constitution.
Okay. It was 39. I have a follow-up question.
If the gentleman wishes to yield, the lady is recognized to ask a series of questions.
Certainly, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. Is it also true that the United States Constitution, which those 39 white land-owning men signed, explicitly excluded women, minorities, indigenous Americans, and individuals who did not own land?
From doing what? When you said exclude them, when you say from doing what?
For being a part of this founding document and this Constitution.
I will try to understand what you're asking without having been there, of course, and not read thoroughly what happened in the room when they were signing that document. I'm not certain who was participating or not. I do know women did not have the vote then. I mean, Republicans gave women the vote just 100 years ago. So I understand that part. So I'm going to assume that no woman was active in it.
Okay.
I'll say without having lived that experience.
Okay, well, that answers it. Thank you. I would like to debate the bill.
Yes, for debate the bill.
So we can agree that yes to both of these two statements are true. This country's constitution was signed exclusively by 39 white land-owning men who explicitly denied the same rights they gave themselves to women, minorities, indigenous Americans, and individuals who did not own land. Now, there's a problem here. According to this legislation, HB 324, if I were a teacher and if I taught these two facts in my classroom, I could be in violation of Part 8 of Subsection C of this bill, which states that teachers cannot teach that, quote, the United States was created by members of a particular race or sex for the purpose of oppressing members of another race or sex. Now, perhaps we could have a debate about whether or not I did just violate that bill, but the more important point I want to make here is this bill is indeed a slippery slope. Yet, I stand here re-emphasizing the point I made back in May, the very first time we debated this bill. Whose truth is the truth? And who gets to decide that? This bill is so incredibly dangerous, but on top of that, it's also incredibly insulting. It's incredibly insulting for roughly 100 members of this legislative body to think that they know better about what should be taught in our schools than the 100,000 public school teachers who have made it their life's profession as teachers. My colleagues love talking about making decisions local and about getting big government out of our everyday life. Well, nothing screams big government like a purely partisan process dictating every facet of education down to what we can and cannot teach from history. I find this bill to be insulting to so many. A majority of this room seems to be under the impression that if we teach kids about racism or the racist history of this country, this will somehow automatically create a generation of racists. It is insulting to think that our kids cannot handle the truth. I'll be honest, this bill scares me, not only because of how insulting and degrading it is to teachers, to parents, and to students, but it also because of the fact that it leaves so many doors wide open. So many questions about this bill remain unanswered. Who is in charge of enforcing this bill? Will DPI have a special unit that goes from school to school on a witch hunt trying to trap teachers? Will there be an investigative unit looking into the teachers accused of teaching things that's banned in this bill? What happens to those teachers whose lessons are disputed? Are those teachers given a warning, multiple warnings? Are they suspended without pay? Are they fired? Can they ever teach again in public schools? Where does this end? When we come back to a session next year with more suggested items to even add to this list. I really do believe that most people in this room understand that this bill serves no other purpose than to agitate people and to push us farther apart on cultural issues. There are so many real challenges facing so many real people in our state right now. This is not one of them. Every minute this legislative body has wasted focusing on this legislation was a minute we could never get back, which we now can never use to actually improve the state, our state, in a way that would matter or make a difference in the lives of parents, teachers, and students. I ask my colleagues, please remember the reason why you're sitting in this room right now, to serve the people of North Carolina. Again, to serve the people of North Carolina, all people of North Carolina. And I hope you think seriously about whether or not a dangerous, insulting, and open-ended piece of legislation like this is truly the best way to serve all of the constituents that you're tasked with serving. I urge you to please vote no on this legislation. If we don't learn from history, let's just make sure we remember it's bound to repeat itself. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Robinson, Representative Graham, rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To speak on the bill?
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, members. I stand to speak in opposition of this bill. As the only American, Native American, American Indian, however you want to recognize us, it goes against my culture, goes against our history. And because of that, I feel it's my obligation to say I will not support this. While we can agree that our teachers deserve, our students deserve a quality, fair, and unbiased education, this bill is rooted and going in the wrong direction. This bill threatens to limit the ability of our teachers to teach our true history of our state and nation, both the good and the bad, and we have both. We all agree to that, the good and bad. The reality is, there are dark parts of our history, just as there are brilliant triumphs of our history. This bill threatens to limit the ability of our North Carolina teachers to teach about the atrocities that Native communities across this country suffered. As the member of the First People, you know that history, but the sad part about the history that you know is that you were taught that my people were bad people. Therefore, they were slaughtered when they were standing up to defend their communities, their livelihoods, their food. They were slaughtered. They were protecting their land. As a result of that, they were slaughtered. I cannot stand here today and allow my heritage and my history to be further erased. I can't support that. The truth of the matter, this bill is based on fear-mongering, but it's the communities like mine that will pay the price. The true history will never be known. This bill is a return to the previous inaccurate teachings of my communities, where we ignore the harsh reality that millions of Native people died from disease, war, and mistreatment. It's this we want our children to understand about my culture. I was told, taught, as a young child that we were savages. Not only that, TVs, the movies, depicted us as savages. Bad people. You don't want to be around that Indian over there. He's a bad man. He might scalp you. He might hurt you. He might bring harm to you. There's a reason that many of our native communities remain impoverished even after centuries of hard work to get ahead. It's important that our children understand our history. Not just my history, but African-American history, Hispanic history, Jewish history. The parts and the vital roles they played in the development of this country. I cannot stand here for this to be erased today or any day as long as I'm serving in this body. I think it's my obligation to stand up for my people and speak truth. And that's what I'm speaking today. I'm speaking truth. I think our children need to know the truth. Children who are unborn need to know the truth. And the facts. Just the facts. Nothing more. What's wrong with that? I do fully intend to vote against this bill. You vote your conscience. We will vote our conscience. We will vote our feeling based on fact. And I thank you, Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose? Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question for the House is the motion concur of the Senate Committee substitute to House Bill 324. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Representative Brisson, Representative Arp, just off the floor. Chair will give it just a moment for those gentlemen to. Representative Richardson here. Okay. The clerk will lock the machine, record the vote. 60, having voted in the affirmative, 41 in the negative. The House does concur with the Senate Committee substitute to House Bill 324. Bill is ordered enrolled and sent to the governor by a special messenger. Representative McNeil is recognized and forth a conference report. The clerk will read.
Conference report, Senate Bill 542, to the President of the Senate and the Speaker of the House of Representatives. The conference is appointed to resolve the difference between the Senate and the House of Representatives on Senate Bill 542, a bill to the Entitlement Act to allow the North Carolina State Health Plan for teachers and state employees to adopt program and incentivize members to report activities such as fraud, waste, abuse of the health care providers, providing services to plan members, and to establish governing standards for property finders. House Committee Substitute, favor 622-21. Submit the following report. The Senate and House agree to the following amendments. The House Committee Substitute, favor 622-21, and the Senate concurs, and the Committee Substitute is amended. On page 1, 927, by rewriting the line to read, be $500 or maximum of 20% any net recovery made. The conference recommended that the Senate and the House of Representatives adopt this report. Date conference report, September 1st, 2021. Conference for the Senate, Senator Bergen, Chair, Senators Ballard, Hawick, and Davis. Conference for the House of Representatives, Representative McNeil, Chair, Representatives Lambert, Hurley, and Gill.
Calendar, without objection, next calendar, so ordered. Chair directs that Senate Bill 552, title limit, who may advertise adoption laws, be withdrawn from the Committee on Rules, referred to the Committee on Judiciary 2 with a serial referral to Rules, should the bill pass out of that committee favorably. Chair further directs that Senate Bill 593, special education due process hearing, that bill be withdrawn from the Committee on Rules. That bill is referred to the Committee on Judiciary 2, and if favorable, referred to the Committee on Rules, Counter and Operations. Chair directs that Senate Bill 278, property family law reimbursement, property expenditures, that be withdrawn from the Committee on Rules. That bill also be referred to the Committee on Judiciary 2. Strike that. That bill is going to be referred to the Committee on Judiciary 3, serial bureau, and with a serial referral to the Committee on Rules thereafter. Senate Bill 465, short titles, trash collection, multifamily residential. That bill is withdrawn from the Committee on Rules. That bill is referred to the Committee on Insurance with a serial referral to the Committee, Local Government Committee on Land Use, as well as the Committee on Regulatory Reform and the Committee on Rules thereafter. Actually, Chair's going to strike the referral to the Committee on Reg Reform. Local Government Land Use will be sufficient, then Rules. Representative Arp, the Chair noticed the gentleman right after we had voted, I saw the gentleman out of the corner of my eye, which is why I called. Is the gentleman wishing to be recorded as having voted aye on that last bill?
Yes, recorded as voting aye on House Bill 324.
The gentleman be recorded as having voted aye. And Representative Reeves, the Chair doesn't have an excused absence from Representative Richardson. Is he here today? Okay. Senate Bill 60, Corcorate.
Senator Jackson, Senate Bill 60, a bill to be entitled an act to revise certain rules related to solid waste management facilities adopted by the Environmental Management Commission. General Senator North Carolina enacts.
Gentleman from Duplin, Representative Dixon, recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, this bill has been well marinated, and it has no opposition to my knowledge. I would appreciate your vote.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, question for the House is the passage of Senate Bill 60 on its second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Arp, aye. Reeves, aye. Representative Alston, wish to vote. Clerk will lock machine, record the vote. 102 having voted in the affirmative, none in the negative. Senate Bill 60 passed the second reading without objection. We'll be ready third time.
General Senator North Carolina enact.
Question for the House is the passage of Senate Bill 60 on its third reading. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. Senate Bill 60, having passed its third reading, ordered enrolled and sent to the governor. Senate Bill 99, clerk will read.
Senators McInnes, Bergen, and Craven, Senate Bill 99, a bill to be entitled Clarify Law on Theft and Catalytic Converters. General Senator North Carolina enact.
Gentleman from Columbus, Representative Jones, recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This comes from the Senate with a unanimous vote, went through our rules with a unanimous vote. There's no known opposition. I ask for your green vote.
Further discussion, further debate? Not. The question for the House is the passage of Senate Bill 99 on its second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. ARP, aye. ARP, aye. Representatives Johnson and Sasser wish to vote. Clerk will lock the machine, record the vote. 102 having voted in the affirmative and none in the negative. Senate Bill 99 passes second reading and without objection. We'll be read a third time.
General Senator North Carolina enact.
Question for the House is the passage of Senate Bill 99 on its third reading. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. Senate Bill 99, having passed third readings, ordered enrolled and sent to the governor. Senate Bill 3, actually, we're going to go to Senate Bill 321. Clerk will read.
Senators McInnes, Lazara, and Edwards, Senate Bill 321, a bill to be entitled an act revising the North Carolina Controlled Substance Act. General Assembly of North Carolina enacted.
The gentleman from Burke, Representative Blackwell, is recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In May, the House passed House Bill 752 by a vote of 117-0. This is the same bill coming back as a Senate bill. The only difference is being a couple of numbers that were changed in the end of the bill, numbering of the sections, and a rewording of the effective date that didn't change the substance of the effective date. So I would ask the House to give approval to the Senate version of this same bill we approved unanimously.
Further discussion, further debate. For what purpose does the lady from Guilford, Representative Harrison, rise?
To ask the bill sponsor a question.
Representative Blackwell, does the gentleman yield?
I will.
He yields.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Representative Blackwell, I appreciate that this is exactly the same bill that we voted on unanimously, but I must have missed it in the House bill. But does this this seems to raise penalties. It seems to create a new Class I felony penalty.
I apologize, Representative Harrison, that I didn't quite understand what you were saying, that you were asking.
Well, it looks like this bill adds a new Class I felony when it used to be a Class I misdemeanor. I was just concerned about the increase in penalties in this bill.
What page are you on? I'm still not understanding your words.
I'm sorry, Mr. Speaker, may I respond? I am in the incarceration. I'm in the incarceration note, actually.
Okay.
And it's in the beginning, it talks about a new Class I felony. And and the reason I ask this is I'm concerned about substance abuse, that it's been more of a punishment than treatment, and then we're adding a new penalty. And I'm just wondering if that's accurate.
I'm not sure I can answer your question with clarity. I know that the purpose of the bill primarily is to add new description of designer type drugs that are developed in an effort to get around the specifics of the current Substance Control Act. That in addition, one of the things that was desired and we hope would be accomplished by this is that with regard to fentanyl in particular, that there would be some increase penalty by the description of where it falls in terms of the classifications. And beyond that, again, I apologize. I'm not sure I have better information for you. When we were working on this bill, we met with representatives from the State Department of Justice, from the Attorney General's office, and with two women from the crime lab to talk about the specifics, and this was all in accordance with what I understood, and I think Senator McInnes understood, was what they felt was appropriate, both in updating the statute to cover the appropriate drugs and in dealing with any possible change in how the penalty might apply to a particular drug.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Union, Representative R. Price?
To speak on the bill briefly. The
gentleman has the floor.
That's actually contained in Section 7, Representative Harrison, of the bill, and what it does is expand from cocaine to include cocaine, fentanyl, and carfentanil. And that's where the incarceration note is expanded by the classification of those in Section 7.
Further discussion, further debate. If not, the question for the House is the passage of Senate Bill 321 on second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 102 having voted in the affirmative, none in the negative. Senate Bill 321 passes second reading without objection. Will be read a third time.
General Assembly of North Carolina next.
Further discussion, further debate. If not, Question for the House is the passage of Senate Bill 321 on third reading. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. Senate Bill 321, having passed its third reading, is ordered enrolled and sent to the governor. Senate Bill 542, the clerk will read.
Senate Bill 542, conference report. Senate Bill 542, a bill to the entitlement act to allow the North Carolina State Health Plan for teachers and state employees to adopt the program. General Assembly, North Carolina enacts.
The gentleman from Randolph, Representative McNeil, is recognized for a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I do move that the House adopt the conference report for Senate Bill 542.
The gentleman has moved that the House adopt the conference report for Senate Bill 542. The gentleman has the floor to debate the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Fellow members, the only change that was made in the conference was the incentive was raised from 2% to 20%. And so all the conferees signed it in the House and Senate. I appreciate your positive vote.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question for the House is the adoption of the conference report, Senate Bill 542. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 101 having voted in the affirmative and one in the negative. The House does adopt the conference report to Senate Bill 542, and the Senate will be so notified. Senate Bill 389, the clerk will read.
Senator Jackson, Sanderson, and Edwards, Senate Bill 389, an act to make various changes to the natural environment and cultural resources law of the state and recommend the Department of Environmental Quality and Natural and Cultural Resources. General Assembly, North Carolina enacts.
There are two amendments. Let's go ahead and dispose of the two amendments first. Representative Dixon is recognized, send forth amendment, ABR 61. The clerk will read.
Representative Dixon moves to amend the bill on page 4, lines 35 through 36, by inserting between the lines.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, this amendment has been vetted. There's no opposition to it. It would clarify that the original permittee of Stormwater Pond is, if he's not dead, bankrupt, or dissolved, that permittee is responsible for the party bringing the pond into compliance. Also, it is conforming language to align this process with what the law in Chapter 143 already requires, and DEQ and NC Home Builders do not oppose this change. I'd appreciate your green vote.
Representative Graham, is this on that last vote?
Yes, Mr. Speaker.
The gentleman's recognized.
I'd like to be recorded as voting aye. 542.
The gentleman will be recorded as having voted aye on the passage of Senate Bill 542. Further discussion, further debate on the Dixon Amendment? If not, the question before the House is the adoption of Amendment A1. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The amendment's adopted. Representative Hall is recognized to send forth Amendment AMH 41. Clerk will read.
Representative Hall moves to amend the bill on page 9, lines 45 through 46, by inserting the following language between those lines.
The gentleman's recognized to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is a department request. This just clarifies the department's ability to name features and recognition of private gifts made to the department. I ask for your support.
Further discussion, further debate on the amendment. If not, the question before the House is the adoption of Amendment A2. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The amendment's adopted. We are now back on the bill itself. Who's handling this bill? The gentleman from Duplin, Representative Dixon, is recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This bill has also been well marinated. I know of no current opposition. I would appreciate your green vote.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question before the House is the passage of Senate Bill 389 on its second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Hall.
Aye.
Representative Riddell off the floor. clerk will lock the machine, record the vote. 102 having voted in the affirmative and none in the negative. Senate Bill 389 passes its second reading and without objection be read a third time.
General Assembly of North Carolina annexes.
Question for the House is the passage of Senate Bill 389 on its third reading. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. Senate Bill 389, having passed its third reading, is ordered engrossed and returned to the Senate. Members, chair is going to be yielding the chair shortly to the rules chair to attend to something else. But I did want to advise the House where we are schedule wise. We have completed our votes for the day. However, we are honored that Wes Householder, who was recognized earlier by Representative Hanning, is with us. So Wes, want to welcome you with us. Please join me in welcoming and congratulating him today as well. Members, where we are with for our planning purposes right now is that we are not going to, as advised earlier, we will not be voting on any more bills this week. We have expedited the process and disposed of quite a bit of legislation this week, and so we will and in recognition of the Labor Day holiday, we will not be meeting on Monday as well. There will be a no vote session on Friday that will be for administrative purposes only, but again, there will be no votes, there will be no bills on the calendar, no action taken. And there will not be any votes on Tuesday the 7th. We will, however, have committees are authorized to meet that day that would like to dispose of bills, and we are going to have votes on Wednesday the 8th. The chair anticipates at this point that next week's session dates would be Wednesday and Thursday with a morning voting session on Wednesday, and then Thursday probably the same thing. I believe the first of the public hearings is Wednesday, so that's Wednesday evening. So we'll accommodate the schedule so that members may attend that if they would like, and so that'll be happening then. So with that, notices and announcements. Oh, actually, just a moment. And Chair would ask without objection that the clerk be authorized to release Tuesday's calendar before 3 p.m. on Friday. Hearing no objection, so order. Notices and announcements. For what purpose does the gentleman from Gaston, Representative Hastings, rise?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, a point of personal privilege.
The gentleman has the floor.
And I'll be very brief. I don't think this body has formally mentioned or recognized the 13 service members who were murdered in Kabul, if I'm not mistaken. Of course, I wasn't here last week, but I just wanted to take just a moment and first apologize. When I first heard about this, I posted and I mentioned something about the Navy and the Marine Corps. At that time, we didn't realize that a soldier had also been killed, and so I went back and revised my statement and mentioned the Marine, the sailor, and the soldier, the Marines, the sailor, and the soldier. And so I would just close simply by saying that it's an emotional time. Any time that we have a young man or woman, especially serving overseas, and they've basically signed away their constitutional rights, and they subject themselves to the Uniform Code of Military Justice, and throughout that process, They can be sent anywhere in the world into harm's way, and they leave family members and loved ones behind, fellow service members. And so on behalf of this body, I just wanted to mention to anyone who might be listening that we certainly respect their service and keep their families and their loved ones, their fellow service members, and our allies, we keep them in our thoughts and prayers. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from McDowell, Representative Green, arise?
A point of personal privilege.
The gentleman's recognized for a point of personal privilege.
Yes, sir. Mr. Speaker, the Speaker has already indicated this Monday, before we reconvene, we will be recognizing Labor Day, which is an opportunity we always take to celebrate and recognize our workforce and all the hard workers we have out there. But let me also point out that that will be the birthday of my seatmate, and so he'll have a reason to celebrate as well. So if you would join me in wishing him a happy birthday before.
Members, on House Bill 954, short title, Video Lottery Entertainment, the chair is going to strike the serial referral to rules. The chair will add a referral to J1 and then a referral to rules. For what purpose does the gentleman from Richmond, Representative Moss, arise?
Point of personal privilege.
Gentleman's recognized for a point of personal privilege.
My daughter probably will be watching this later on, but I wanted to wish her a happy 15th birthday. Forgot to do that yesterday, got caught up in a lot of things, but my daughter Maggie turned 15, and now she thinks she can drive me anywhere with this permit she has, so y'all remember us in your prayers.
What purpose is the lady from Guilford, Representative Harrison, arise?
Inquiry of the chair.
Ladies recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wanted to follow up on Speaker Moore's comment about next week's hearing, because I know we talked about it in the redistricting committee that we would be, I think, up in Caldwell maybe next week. Do we know the details of that hearing or any of the other hearings scheduled for the next couple of weeks? Thanks.
Yes. So the chair will just say that the schedule for public comment on redistricting will be sent out, I think, as early as today, probably today. So the chair is going to work to do that. But if the lady will see the chair after session, I'll try to go ahead and get you what I have in hand. But as of right now, the first public comment will take place September 8th in Caldwell County, as I think had been discussed somewhat, a proposed schedule in our committee. There were some changes to that, but members will be notified of those changes with plenty of time to be able to get there. Further notices of announcements? If not, the gentleman from Columbus, Representative Brennan Jones, recognized for a motion.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House do now adjourn to reconvene Friday, September 3rd at 10 a.m., subject to the standard stipulations set forth in Rule 15.1.
Representative Jones moves, seconded by Representative Bell, that the House do now adjourn to reconvene Friday, September 3rd at 10 a.m., subject to the standard stipulation set forth in Rule 15.1. All those in favor will say aye. All those opposed, no. The ayes have it, and the House stands adjourned. Reading of representative statements, the clerk will read.
A representative statement honoring the service and memory of Marine POC Henry Ellis. Whereas throughout our history, the United States of America has been protected by patriots who risked their lives and served nobly to protect and preserve the independence and the principles of justice in our republic. And whereas American lives and freedom because of the contributions, immeasurable sacrifice, and unspeakable hardship of brave sons and daughters of the United States Armed Forces who have courageously defended America. And whereas PFC Henry Ellis was born in Rowan County because of a member of the United States Marine Corps historically answering the call of service of a great nation. And whereas on November 30th, 1950, PFC Ellis died in action at the age of 22 in Korea defending the United States military convoy against the Chinese attack at Kotori during the Battle of Chosin Reservoir. And whereas after decades of being missing in action, PFC Ellis remains finally came home to Warren County, where he was laid to rest in Salisbury National Cemetery on August 23rd, 2021. Now, therefore, it is fitting to respectfully commemorate the bravery and service of PFC Henry Ellis and to encourage all citizens to show respect with grateful hearts to families who have lost loved ones during the call to defend and safeguard our freedoms, and to show support to families who have loved ones who are still missing in action. In witness whereof, the undersigned certifies that the foregoing statement was read in the House and placed upon the Journal on the first day of September 2021, submitted by Representative Harry Warren, James White, House Principal Clerk.
Thanks, Reg.
Noted.